How do you know if your organization has bias? There's a saying from an old Jewish rabbi, by your fruits you shall know them. So if you look around and you see that there are no women, there are no people of color, there are no LGBT, there are no queer people, clearly there must be a bias there.
Hello and welcome back to Tech and Startups, the premier growth network for technology leaders. Let's get started.
Okay, we're going to begin our panel. And so what I'm going to ask first is that folks, we just whip around. I'm going to just do a quick roll call, and I'd love for you to just say your name and something you want the world to know about you. Just one quick, brief phrase. Damien, would you set a fine example for us?
Yeah, my name is Damien Burke. I use he, him pronouns, and I build software startups.
Thanks so much. And Tiffany?
My name is Tiffany Bowden. A sentence about myself. I'm interested in a world that works for everyone.
And Brian?
Yeah, so my name is Brian Boyd. I'm a recovering sales executive. I now work in customer success and have a great passion for issues of diversity and bringing them to the workplace.
Erica?
Hi, my name is Erica Love. I am a software engineer, and I'm based in San Francisco, California, and originally I've been working in design and admin, so I've seen all across the board.
Well, as I said, my name is Rafaela. I'm a UX researcher based here in Brazil. I use she pronouns, and I do believe that my dogs are my children.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So I'll work on getting Nathan to join us, but I'd like to start with a variant of a question that Brian posed earlier. I'm twisting it a little bit. And the question for the group is, this is conversational, jump in. There are eight of us, so just be cognizant of that and how long your answers are. The question is, how do we begin to recognize biases in our organizations, and how do we begin to address them?
I will start out with the genesis of the question. For me, a phrase that comes up whenever we're hiring, someone will always say this if we suggest that we be diverse in our hiring. They will say it is our responsibility to hire the very best applicant. And that presupposes that the best applicant is not going to be diverse. And so that tends to make my head explode and tends to make me devalue that person's opinions pretty much forever. But if you find yourself in that type of a situation, what do you do to kind of help people realize they have that bias? Because in some cases, these are not intrinsically bad people, right? Although I am not saying there's very good people on both sides, don't get me wrong, but how do you make sure you can work with your organization to kind of turn around that kind of thinking?
Once I've heard a talk where this woman started asking if people thought that Black people were more prone to become criminals. And if you could raise your hand if you agreed. No one raised their hands, they're not crazy. And then she brought information that we have, if you look at the people who are in prison here in Brazil, Black people, I don't remember the actual number, but they are like 75%. It's a really high number. So then she said, well, it's just, I'm going to stop there. If you look at this data, something is wrong. So you're either the person who believes that some group is less than, or you understand that there's something wrong that we have to change it. So I really liked this approach. So if someone is saying, well, we want to hire the best, well, okay. Do you think that any minority cannot be the best? No one's going to agree with that. So if they can be the best, why shouldn't we hire them?
I also want to start at the premise there. When you're hiring for someone and bringing someone into your organization, the best is not what you're looking for. You're looking for the person that can most contribute to what you're trying to accomplish. There is no well-ordered ranking of any of people in any particular fields of endeavor, except maybe the Olympics. but not for any sort of team endeavor like what we do in companies and in our work. So what you're looking for is finding somebody that can contribute to what you're doing. You're not looking for the best. And also, like, to go back to the original question, How do you know if your organization has bias? There's a saying from an old Jewish rabbi, by your fruits you shall know them. So if you look around and you see that there are no women, there are no people of color, there are no LGBT, there are no queer people, you clearly there must be a bias there.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely see that in, I'm here in the Bay Area in Silicon Valley, and worked in different organizations. And that's been something that I've seen as well, is a lot of the companies that I've seen that there was a more of an issue with diversity. And also, you know, those same companies tended to have a lot more employee turnover than others that did have more diversity. But a lot of times the places that had the issues, one of their bigger things was they kept repeating over and over again, you know, we're trying to get the best, we're trying to get from the best schools, the best this, the best that. And I guess there's some kind of perception that there is this elusive best person that they can hire and then sit at the table and not have to do education, not have to integrate them or anything like that. And it's some kind of a very weird Superman kind of scenario. And a lot of times they have this vision in mind. And then a lot of times they bring, you know, the people in who fits that scenario and it doesn't work out. And they wonder why, or if they bring a bunch of, or if the same person hires that person over and over again, and then they wonder why things aren't progressing, things aren't being, you know, more dynamic, they're not making better product, they're just doing the same thing over and over again. And they're saying, well, you know, things are going great, but it's not going great because they don't, they're wondering why they're not getting new things happening. It's because that diversity is not happening. You're not having, you know, people who have different views, different opinions, different backgrounds, different lifestyles, who have come from different entry points to be able to work in that capacity. And when you don't have that, then you're going to be just as stale as when you just started.
Let me just make a point. You brought up something really interesting. You're right, you go to certain schools, you hire certain types of people. As a hiring manager, if you hire a white guy that went to Stanford and he doesn't work out, there's going to be a little fallout on that because you hired a white guy that went to Stanford if it doesn't work out. If you go to a diverse candidate, you go to somebody from a different background and that doesn't work out, that gets pinned on you, right? So I do, and that is very much an institutional bias. And I think that's one of the hardest things that we have to overcome.
That's actually really insightful because the process of hiring people is it's not foolproof. There's no single measure. There's no set of rules that can get you. So this is the right candidate. This is not. But people want rules because that way they can say to their boss, "I did it right. You can't blame me for that."
Yep.
And so, in as much as you're able to correctly measure who is the best person to bring onto your team, in as much as those rules reinforce the problems we have in our society with different marginalized communities, following those rules is going to contribute to those problems and reinforce them.
I think it gets easier once you've started. So where I work, people really wanted to hire a lot of people in technology from great colleges, but they had one manager who went to a college that no one knows, it's far away, it's not very famous. So that person started, well, we're going to hire people from maybe just not those very famous colleges. And it started on the way that it became a wave. So if you look around in our team today, more than half are not from very famous colleges, and we are a really great performing team. So once you have maybe one example, it gets a little easier. I've also heard on the selective process that you can ask for human resources when you have a pool of candidates so that you can have certain amount of people that you need to be there. So I will not accept to start a selective process if I don't have 50% of the applicants being women and 50% being men. I would not accept to start working, interviewing people if you just brought white people. It's not acceptable. So you have to begin right. And when people do that, you actually give a great start to compare teams. So if everybody is starting out 50% men, 50% women, but some area, it's always hiring men, when other areas are doing differently, well, maybe you can pinpoint where you need to work at someone there. It's actually might be giving more attention to a group of people. Even the people who start, they are not representative. They're just a very homogenized group of people.
Tiffany, I wonder if you had any thoughts you'd like to share on this one.
Yeah, I was actually going to say that one of the things that stands out to me in my consulting space is that when we have conversations about terminations and why these things happen as it relates to impacts to retention, one of the things that often comes up is that individuals were not a good culture fit. So I'm really kind of, I hone in on those types of things is when you constantly have those elements of, they weren't a fit. Those I think are also good cues and indicators for these biases. There's a couple of tests also that are pretty accessible, the implicit association tests. They're not foolproof, but they also can give some visibility to our biases.
So when we've talked quite a bit about looking outside and bringing people in and ways to do that and recognize when we're not doing it in a way that's fully equitable and accessible. I wonder if the panel has thoughts on the ways that individuals, team leaders, organization leaders can help candidates feel welcome, hires feel welcome once they're inside the workplace. Another way to speak to that might be Rafaela pointed out in her presentation that retention becomes difficult when people don't feel welcome. So it's to an organization's benefit to maintain retention. And so another way to look at that might be how can we have people feel welcome in their workplaces, or how can we encourage retention?
I think diversity on itself helps with that. For a long time, I was accustomed to be the only woman in my team. That went for a lot of years. And it creates situations where, well, maybe I need a tampon. There's no one to ask about it. It's a very simple thing. But you might be around 30 people. You don't have the chance to do that. We have this tradition in South Brazil where people used to do a lot of barbecues. And one of the teams I entered once, they emailed me asking what I ate. I was like, what I eat? I eat meat like everyone else. Maybe they thought I ate rose petals or something. But it's what happens when you have a group that is just a lot of men and they never work with women. So I think you can do a lot of preaching. You can educate people. But it's never the same as having an actual diverse team.
And to piggyback on top, even more effective is having a diversity in the leadership, diversity in the people of privilege, senior management, leadership, those sort of roles.
Just on Rafaela's comments, I want to say that that's where tokenism really breaks down. So we keep trying to hire one diverse person. So we have the one diverse person and they keep quitting. That probably means you need to look at everything you're doing. And I'll also say that in this day and age, diverse companies are just considered cooler. They're just flat out considered cooler. I mean, so I think that there's a big problem where you've got the people in upper management that maybe are older white men that don't understand diversity, they don't understand diverse candidates, but they know that the way that their company is going to do better and have better employees overall is to be diverse. I mean, I think they really can. You can look around if you're in San Francisco or here in Oakland, in my building that I'm in, it's a 20-story building, and when the elevator doors open at each floor, some of the floors just have an energy, and those are generally the more diverse companies. And when the people get on, like they're in the death march, getting on the elevator, they tend to be the least diverse companies. So eventually, I think that the powers that be that maybe are not diverse are going to have to turn around and do this because it's the right thing to do to have a great company to retain people overall.
Yeah, and I think even coming in the door, asking questions about your preferred pronouns on HR paperwork and questions about, you know, even Raphael's reference to food, right? Like if you have any allergies, you know, just trying to understand someone else's human experience like that, I think is really important just to, you know, really, you know, make someone feel comfortable, make someone feel welcome. It's funny she brought up food because I have a bunch of food allergies, you know, and so I know that's a really easy way for people to engage me and make me feel welcome. Another added thing that I've found helps other minorities feel more welcome to the team is having a dedicated mentor to, you know, help them get to know people, help be a guide around the office and office, you know, logistics and politics and socialization, and get to know them as a person and then help them make other personal connections around the organization as well.
Absolutely. And I know another thing would be don't let them be the last person of that group to be brought into that organization. A lot of places I've worked at, I've been either the first person or the only person of, you know, a certain disenfranchised group. I know it's definitely hard when you're trying to bring in diversity into an organization that has zero diversity within that group. But I mean, you know, just being very open and helpful with them, and you know, the best thing that they would, you know, for me personally, that I've been thankful for and I've wanted and I've known, I've heard this as well, is just don't let them be the only person or the last person of that group to be hired on, because that's where, you know, talking about tokenism again, that's where tokenism tends to happen, that, you know, people think you get check off the box, like I got one of this, I got one of that, you know, and then you're done and you just, you know, lay back and business as usual. But it's an ongoing process for, you know, every organization, and just don't let there be only one person of that one group.
Can I also elevate that? I do think that a lot of organizations tend to focus on diversity, which usually looks like demographics, but those companies are not, you know, interacting with several. They may have a diverse organization, but they're not in fact inclusive. So they still have these retention issues. So you can have, you know, the metrics as they want them from a standpoint of minorities or maybe even women, but they're incredibly ableist, or they're not inclusive in terms of sexual identity and other types of diversity. So I think there needs to be a little bit more of an expansive view from that standpoint. The other part being that if and when you do have these situations where, you know, you only have a couple of people that are representing a particular demographic, there shouldn't be an expectation that those people are going to haul all the emotional labor to represent their entire demographic. Those types of things can be incredibly taxing. And those are some of the things that ultimately employees complain to me about when I have the one-on-ones and deep dives, is that they're constantly being asked for the Black perspective, or to be included in usability tests and such on top of already existing jobs. So I think that it's just something that needs to be taken into
consideration. Yeah, it's actually very difficult to know how to make people welcome when they're not welcome in society in general. When you've grown up in a culture and a world that doesn't welcome these particular marginalized groups, learning how to welcome them and keep them included and keep them comfortable is actually a very difficult skill and needs to be trained on. And so I did training with the Ally Skills Workshop that's offered by Frameshift Consulting. They did an excellent job, and other people offer that same workshop. And then also, organization I know, Cohere, does another workshop. This is, you know, this stuff is hard work. You have to put the effort in, you have to learn how to do it. And if you don't, you won't even know how you're screwing it up, other than people will leave.
I think there's some work that can be done beforehand So I've watched a friend of mine who is a trans man, and he was hired at a really nice company, but they actually, before he started working, they actually promoted a lecture for their employers on what it's like to be LGBT, what it's like to be a trans person. They actually consulted him on bathroom situations and if he was, he felt comfortable before he started. So when he did, most of the groundwork would had been laid already. And I think there's another attention on leisure activities. I know that sometimes in the society that we live in, some activities are more focused on some type of people. So for example, here in Brazil, it's very common for people to have, I don't know, soccer Wednesdays or maybe barbecue Fridays as a leisure activity usually promoted by the company where everybody can take part in. But the truth is that soccer is a very male-dominated sport, and it, women are not encouraged to take part in football and soccer since childhood. So if the only leisure activity where you can meet your team and maybe talk aside of work is soccer, women will not go. If the only activity is barbecue, vegetarians will not go. And if the only activity where you can meet your coworkers aside of work, you're going to drink, maybe people who don't drink because of religious reasons, they won't be able to participate either. And I've seen companies try to accommodate different people, but they don't change the activities aside of work where they people can really meet. I've seen companies that have maybe video games, but the only game available was FIFA, that it's a soccer game that it's mostly played by men. So it's not inviting. You don't have places where people can meet and talk and get to know each other if you're not looking for those specific activities that are focused on white men.
Thank you for that. Thank you so much, everyone. At this point, I think it's a great time for us to break off and just give everyone a chance to do one last word or one final thought. Great example would be a top tip. And I'd like to lead that. So something that comes up for me in conversations that I have among my peers, it sounds like this. It's somebody who looks and sounds like me, has a background like mine, and says, I want to be an advocate. I want to be an ally. I want to be a champion. But I don't know how, and I don't know how to ask. And also, I'm uncomfortable asking the people around me. Tiffany earlier mentioned, you know, we don't want to say, let's go get the black perspective, the whatever perspective, right, from the person in our office, because that puts them in a difficult position, right? And so as someone who doesn't know and is trying to learn, that, to answer that question of how can I learn, there are actually a number of things, resources out there. Obviously, there's a lot of reading. There's reading about things like privilege, but there's something called an anti-racist white affinity group. And so there are many chapters around the United States and I think around the world, more common in big cities, less common outside. But it's an opportunity for people who are white, who may fit the other boxes of the demographic and the majority, they can come together and they can start to address their own racial identity, sexual identity, et cetera, and start to see where what they're experiencing may not be, you know, might not be the default, might just be something different. Start to see where, start to explore the experiences that others are having without treading on the experiences of others. So I just wanted to put that out there as a tip. And then I'm going to roll call through if you don't mind. And how about Raphael, would you like to give us a tip or a last word?
First of all, I think just because I'm a UX researcher, I believe we can always go further with empathy. It's really hard to have empathy with people who might be oppressing you in some way, but it's necessary in order to change situations. And you can always share material. So I've encountered people who are self-taught Python developers and self-taught English, but they cannot go online to learn about women issues. So I think we have to call that out and get people to learn more, understand more, and share material. The where you can find resources, where you can read more. Maybe you can, I don't know, present someone with the gift of a book about diversity, or maybe things like that, and start talking about it. If we never talk about it, it's always a weird issue. It's always touchy, and everybody's afraid to even start. So I believe if we just make it more common, things can get better.
Let's see, Brian?
Yeah, so I just want to say that this has been an incredible experience kind of being here with you all and talking about these things. And I want to thank Rafaela in particular for her perspective. You know, Alex, you and I worked together for a while for a particular company that was perhaps not the most diverse company in the world, particularly at the upper echelons and the board level. And I think that we all have to do what we have to do to kind of chip away at that and just keep things going in the right direction. And sadly, there's not going to be one lightning bolt moment that's going to change everything, but it can be changed and we have to keep working it.
Thank you. Damien?
Yeah, I just want to repeat, you know, allies, being an ally is a lot of work. It requires a lot of skills, a lot of knowledge. It requires taking a risk for yourself. That things might not go well for you. But if you're not doing that, you're part of the problem. And if you want to be part of the solution instead, it's going to take a lot of work, a lot of training. You're probably going to need help. Pay those people who help you. Pay them well. They deserve it. It's a lot of work. And yeah, where you have privilege, wherever that may be, it's not your fault, but it is your responsibility.
Thank you. And Erica?
Hi, yeah. I also wanted to thank Rafaela for starting this conversation. This has been an amazing talk, and it's great to hear everybody's different opinions. That's how we progress and do amazing things. I guess one small thing I would like to add would be, you know, for everybody who hears this, you know, just at your organization, wherever you work, just look into some of the smaller things that, you know, can also help with diversity. For example, like dress code is a big thing that people don't really think about. I know for myself, I wear head wraps a lot. I'm wearing one today. A lot of people who look at dress codes don't really think that they can be very uncomfortable for people because culturally they have different ways that they express themselves in the workplace professionally. And so seeing things like not being able to wear head wraps or things like that, you know, for certain groups, it could, you know, seem very simple and not that they bought their eyelashes on, but really for people like myself who wear my hair natural and culturally I'm used to wearing head wraps when I'm not doing different styles, that is something that really hinders me from being focused on what I'm working on. You know, I'm more focused on trying to fit somebody else's mold rather than focus on doing the best job I can do. Whether you feel affected or not, definitely look into that as something that could be helping people feel more comfortable at their workplace.
Thank you so much, Erica. And Nathan?
Hey guys, how's it going? I think the one thing that I want to leave people with from my perspective is this isn't like a small area of your life. These kind of lessons, everything you learn about diversity, all of the empathy that you develop translates into all of your relationships. I think it's a cornerstone of having a degree of emotional intelligence and learning how to listen and understand people and treat them as an individual beyond the expectations that you might come to the table with is super important to just being a happy, fulfilled person. And I think you're going to learn a lot about yourself, you know, through that journey as well. And just how you can be a better version of yourself too.
Nice. Thank you so much. I think I got everyone. Is there someone that I missed? I think not. Thank you. So to Tiffany, Nathan, Brian, Rafaela, Damien, Erica, thank you all so much for participating as panelists. It's just an honor to be in the work with you. And I think everybody knows, but maybe not. So this is going into, this is a virtual part of a virtual conference series for tech and startups. And there's a little bit of audience, but also this will be edited and cut for a YouTube channel and podcast. There are about 14 or 15 of these in the hopper already, so it's going to take a little while to come out. But I'll be sure to notify you guys when it's on the way out. And wow, just thanks so much for taking this time, that good 90 minutes out of your business day. And yeah, thank you. I feel very honored.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you
for inviting me. It was really nice talking to everybody.
These are your new best friends, Rafaela.
Good to know. And for me, though, right now it's not working hours. It's 8 p.m. here.
We've gotten some fantastic insights on strengthening your team. But what about other ways you can strengthen your team? I've assembled an 8-page guide on the 4 quadrants of strengthening your team with key insights from more than 11 veteran tech team leaders. To get yours, grab the link below this video. I'm so glad you joined us today. If this video was helpful, give it a like, go ahead and subscribe and hit the bell so that tech and startup videos continue to show up in your feed. I'll see you in the other videos.